Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, Slackers. Welcome to the Slacker Podcast, episode 3 of season 4. This week, it is with Phoebe Bridgers. This season's range of guests is ridiculous. We have so many amazing artists lined up for you. I don't know if I've actually announced everybody who's coming up on the podcast, but I'll go through it now. Next week, we've got Johnny Burrell. The week after that, KSI, then Phineas, then Sleaford Mods, then Bob Geldof, then Haim, then Leanne LaHavas, Alan McGee, MJ Cole, Enter Shikari, Idols, Sean Paul, Jarvis Cocker, and I am recording 3 separate podcasts this week to add to that, and I'm just going to keep them going. That is the sort of content that you're getting here on the Slacker Podcast. If you like the idea of that or those, and you want the podcast to drop in to your RSS feed every single week, then do me a favor and subscribe to the podcast and leave us a little review as well. If you want to go further than that, you can jump onto the Patreon page because I'm doing exclusive podcasts for Patreons. I'm just about to record a little one now. I put up weekly Slacker playlists, live podcasts, lots of YouTube content, and yeah, like I'm putting loads of stuff up on the Patreon. So if you want to support independent content makers, if you can, for the price of whatever it is, like, was it $3.99 a month? What's that, like a cup of tea? It's like less than a pint. That would be incredible. patreon.com/slackerpodcast. And if not, then just keep on enjoying the free content anyway, because I know times are tight and you're absolutely sound, and I want you to listen to this and share it as many people as possible. This week, our portrait of a patron is Jiren Shoup, who has told us that her favorite album is David Bowie's Hunky Dory. Favorite band is the 1975. The best release is The Birthday Party by the 1975. And her worst band is Imagine Dragons. She just says, I'm not a fan. I just can't. right, we're moving on now to today's podcast. And just before we get to today's podcast, I kind of wanted to ask you what you thought about the Slacker Friends music panel show that I've started doing. We're on episode 2 at the moment. I've been dropping them on Sundays, which I'm going to change to Fridays now, because the last couple of weeks I've ended up working 7 days in a row without days off, and it's starting to affect my mental health. I am starting to feel threadbare, so I'm going back. I'm taking a day off. I'm going to start putting the Slacker Podcast out on Tuesdays, Slacker Friends Podcast out on Fridays. On Saturdays, I'm going to lie on my big fat ass and I'm going to do absolutely nothing, and I'm going to do a bit of self-care. How about that? Also, you can go and subscribe to my new Slacker YouTube channel, which I'll put a link to below. We've got album reviews of Haim, Phoebe Bridgers and Wiley this week, and loads of music industry bids and loads of other stuff. Anyway, if you've just joined in and this is the first time you've listened to the Slacker Podcast, I don't normally ramble about stuff, like maybe I do. but yeah, if you're fresh to this and you're just coming in because of Phoebe Bridgers, then welcome to this podcast where we play early demos from incredible artists and talk absolute nonsense for an hour. Here she is with her new album, Punisher, which is out now, which I gave a 9 out of 10 on my Slacker YouTube channel. She's the best. She's incredible. Will you hear the story about her playing my club night in 2018? It's ridiculous. Slacker Podcast with Phoebe Bridgers in 3, 2, 1. Okay, joining me on the Slacker Podcast this week, we've got Phoebe Bridgers. Phoebe, where are you locking down?
Echo Park, Los Angeles.
Are you in your family home, or are you on your own place?
My own place.
Why? Like, you say that like rolling your eyes, as in like, would it be tough to lock down with your folks, do you think?
Oh my God, it would be so tough. I feel very lucky to have, there's like a yard too, it's great. But LA's weird because it's, I don't know if you have this where you are, but it's like, there are so many people who are just like, this is vacation. I'm going to go on a jog like 24/7.
Yeah.
And LA is like full of that. So it's like hard to even really leave the house.
It's kind of a bit like that over here as well. Like, I think the smaller, like, I'm from a small town. So like, I've been living in London, I've been in Brighton, but back in my hometown, like I'm on the phone to my mom and she's like, nobody's social distancing. They're all walking into each other's houses. Like, it's like they don't have a fucking television anywhere.
It's like a mom's dream to like tell everybody what to do all the time. I talked to a journalist in Germany who said that their friend was Zooming with like 10 of their friends and got the cops called on her because they thought she was having a party.
I mean, that's so it. Funny. It's all like, it's all a solo rave right now. It's all a solo party. Although like, I found that actually like last Friday I was on a Zoom thing with a couple of my friends and family for about 5 or 6 hours, and we were all drinking quite a lot, and I woke up the next day with like, my brain had tricked itself into thinking that it was like I'd gone for a night out the night before.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, exactly. I think the key is just get like obliterated,
yeah, throughout this whole thing. I saw a tweet that made me laugh. It was like, about to hit rock bottom, does anybody want anything?
What do you want brought back from the end of the world?
I don't know. I keep thinking about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or remember they go to the restaurant at the end of the world.
Yeah.
I do want to sit at a diner for like 24 hours when this is done.
I feel
you know what I mean.
Yeah. What do you call the robot in the depressed robot in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Oh, Martin.
Yeah, Martin. I think he feels like a musical spirit animal to some of your tunes, like.
He's an icon. cultural icon.
You know, I was setting all this up today. I say setting this up, like plugging in a microphone and like pointing it. And my missus said, she was like, get rid of those dead flowers. And I was like, no, I think like for this one, I'm going to keep it.
Oh, I have those too on my desk. Yeah, that's funny. I got flowers when this all started and they're so dead, but I like refuse to take them off my desk. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not until they've completely decomposed, where you shake the table and they'd all just wither away.
I have more. And a wreath from Christmas.
Oh my God. All right, you win. You like I mean, your Zoom name, actually I'm not gonna give your Zoom name out because like you just get randoms adding you. I was just about it. It ends in 666. That's all I'm gonna say. So obviously like everything's kind of ramping back up for you. Oh, like, I mean, it was ramping back up, but it still kind of is. Cause like you got a record that's coming out in June, and I cannot wait. Like, you've been so fucking prolific like this year, like the last couple of years, like, you know, the Stranger in the Alps came out, and then your two side projects came out, and then another album. Like, you're on fire at the minute.
Thanks, dude.
So like the idea for the podcast is like, we'll play an early demo at the very beginning, and I mean, some of the demos that we've had over the years, like, I mean, Johnny Marr playing a special Smiths demo that had never been heard before. Some really, really random ones that we've had. Some have been sounded, Manic Street Preachers demo sounded so bad. It sounded like a dictaphone sellotape to a cow's udder. It was just deep. Like, the demo we've got from you is like one of my, the song I think that kicked it all off for my love for your music anyway, was Motion Sickness. And yeah, here's a little blast of it. Mm-hmm. So there you go, not one demo, but two demos this week from Phoebe Bridgers. The demo is of Motion Sickness, or as it's saved in the version I've got, Motion Sickness Demo in brackets, I Hate You.
Yeah.
Was that like a message to the person you were sending it to, or was that the title of a potential title of the song?
It was the potential, it was just the first lyrics that I wrote for it were the first lyrics of the song, which are literally, I hate you. Mm. So,
classic.
So, yeah.
And can you remember like when that was made? Like what's the sort of timestamp around that?
Yeah, I think I was in, it was 2016 and I was in Idaho. I was in between tours. I was on tour with Julian Baker. And then my agent called me and was like, do you want to go on tour with the Violent Femmes 5 days after you are done with Julian Baker? I was like, absolutely. So so it ended in Montana, and then Violent Femmes was going to start up. Or it ended in like Portland or something, but I was already very, very deep into that corner of the world. And then Violent Femmes was going to start on the exact same corner of the world. And so my drummer was from Idaho and I had been to his like beautiful hometown before. And I was like, I want to just like haul up and like write a bunch of music in some cabin by myself.
Yeah. You went full Bon Iver with it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to get very Bon Iver with it. I think I made that joke on my internet like way later once I'd written two songs. I wrote my song, So Smoke Signals, and I wrote Motion Sickness there.
And shit, that place is like the hit factory, right?
Yeah, so I'm like, I gotta go back there.
Yeah.
But I was, Rob Moose, who plays and arranges all the strings on my records, also arranges and plays all the strings on Bon Iver records.
Right, okay.
And I think he commented and was like, I have a type, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean,
in the cabin.
It looks like you're in a cabin right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cabin-y in here.
It looks like a, do you know what it looks like? It looks like a Swedish sauna.
Totally. It can be like that when it's like 105 degrees.
If you start pouring water over coals and you hear sizzling on the podcast, you'll know exactly what Phoebe's doing. So like Motion Sickness wasn't really one of the, it wasn't like a furtive track. It wasn't like one of the first ones that you'd written. It was something that came quite close to recording the album.
Well, yeah, because we recorded the album over the course of over a year where it was like on and off and everybody who was working on it was not getting paid. So it was like kind of like a giant favor to everybody.
Did you have a label at that time?
No, I sold my record to the label, which I really wanted to do because the only thing I had out was this very, very acoustic stripped back thing. And I was afraid people were going to sign me as like a country artist or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't have that much power. And I didn't know what my music sounded like, honestly. So I just had all these like folk songs that I knew I didn't want to be folk songs. I knew I wanted to record them in like some sort of cool way. So I met Tony Berg, the producer. We started, he was doing it for free, like pulling all his weight in and like, you know, getting Rob Moose to play strings, and very awesome scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was so butthurt because I was like, I was like, I want to finish this now. And like, it's taking forever. And like, I'm so ready. All the songs are ready. And there was this one day when after the Idaho trip,
mm-hmm.
there was one day where I think we'd recorded Motion Sickness, or maybe not yet. But there was one day after the Idaho trip where I played Tony a new song that was an old song that I had planned on putting on the record. And he was like, this sucks.
Really? Like, is he that direct to you? Like, is he like, this song's shit?
Yeah, he was just like, this isn't as good as like the other shit. And I was like, so upset. And then I was like, this isn't even a real song. Like, the reason I didn't submit Smoke Signals for this podcast is because there is no demo. Like, the first time I really played it all the way through was when we recorded it that day.
Yeah,
it took us
yeah.
like a day. And Motion Sickness was supposed to be like a Julian Baker style, like, maybe it's because I was just on tour with her, but it was supposed to like start really quiet and then get like kind of epic at the end. It was not supposed to be like a rock song at all. Tony's a great producer. But yeah, I was so upset. And he's like, that's not a real song. And then I showed him my other two ideas and we went from there.
Do you know what it kind of reminds? Have you ever watched that Metallica documentary, Some Kind of Monster?
No, I want to.
Oh though. My God, you I have like to, right? It's basically, I think they must be in their late 40s at that stage, and they're just like, they're in the studio, and Kirk Hammett, the guitarist, is playing a guitar solo, and Lars Ulrich, the little like drummer, is like yelling at him, going, "That's not the guitar solo the best guitarist in the world would play." I'm kind of getting that vibe that like you're Kirk Hammett and he's Lars yes. Ulrich.
Yes, well, I think we're, because then Ethan Gruska, who co-produces the records, he is like the peacekeeper. He has like generalized anxiety disorder, does not want anybody to be fighting, is way more likely if someone says, Ethan, you suck, he's likely to be like, yeah, you're probably right. You know, like he's the sweetest.
Oh, God bless him. I want to give him a hug.
It's great.
So like when you have the record done and you sort of bring it around the labels, like do you have like a fear in the back of your head that nobody will pick it up, or were you just like completely like blown away by it and you knew it was going to go to where it went to?
I didn't have a fear that nobody was going to pick it up, because I think along the way we had met some people, but I didn't know how. I went head first into dealing with like label politics. I'm also like, when I had the idea to just try to find someone who would record the record for free and then sell it to a label, because you know, I had gotten offers that were pretty insanely dismal before I made my record.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't gonna work or pay for my life, which I'm glad I knew. And people were like, yeah, that might be smart. I don't know.
Are you on top? Are you on top of like the politics of it? Are you on top of like, are you somebody who goes into the boardroom with the fine marker and just goes, this ain't gonna work, bub?
I definitely am. I'm fascinated by that stuff, and I respect people who read the fine print.
Yeah, big
but
time.
But I do not. I have an awesome lawyer that I really trust, and my manager. Like, I make them read the fine print so that then I can pretend like I did mm-hmm. and walk into the boardroom and go like,
yeah, exactly.
All right, you sit there, you sit here.
It's like, it's 2020. It's not Motown. Like you need a fair bite of the pie. Like, the music industry is not exactly well renowned for being completely artist friendly. I always feel like when the money trickles down from, like, if you take a percentage of like each record sale or whatever, like a traditional album sale, like the last person to get paid is always the artist, and it's always that way in creative industries. Like,
yeah. You're doing it for exposure, dude.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Man, the amount of
I'm exposure rich.
Yeah, exactly. I pay my rent in exposure, you know.
Yeah.
I just flash my landlord. I'm like, going, listen, Nick, I got so much exposure, man.
I'm gonna expose myself to everyone.
Yeah, but like, you do get that. Like, I mean, I played in bands for a long time, like maybe like 10 years from 14 to 23 or 24. And yeah, like, we played so many gigs that were just for that. Like, did you have to go through that as well, of like paying your dues? Not that you should have to, but like, did you do a lot of those like toilet circuit gigs, those gigs in shopping centers, shopping malls?
Totally. It's just, the fun part of that is I didn't know that it sucked. Like, I was like, oh my god, you guys are never gonna believe it. There's this gig that I got that's gonna be amazing, and it was in like a pizza restaurant. I'm not kidding. I played the pizza restaurant by my parents' house for like most of my life. They would like weirdly give you like $300 as long as you played for like 3 hours. Yeah.
Was this
they really wanted live music.
Holy, like, I've never heard of music in a pizza restaurant generally. I mean, I worked in a pizza restaurant for a bit, and they banned my music taste because I was playing Jimi Hendrix. Not that that was that like mental, but like $300, like how old were you when you were like getting paid that?
Literally like 12 or 13. But think about it, it's like I would put a full band together of my other little kid friends, and then our parents would come and get wasted for like 3 hours.
Yeah,
like they probably made like so much money off of us, you know.
What's a 12 year old spend $300 on? You must have been like the king of the school or queen of the school.
Yeah, well, I would have to split it with my like 8 friends. So like nothing, honestly.
Yeah, I used to put on like club nights when I was in back in my hometown. There was no live music for quite a while, so I put on all the live music, and we used to bribe the bouncers to let in anybody that was 16 and over. So there'd be like about 200 16 17 year old kids paying £5 in to go to this night where there's five bands, and all of them are playing Ace of Spades by Motorhead, and I was cash rich for like 2 years, and I didn't make that money again for about another 6 or 7 years. I was like walking around the town with like a fucking thrown on like big gun.
That's rad.
Yeah, but did you play what sort of covers and stuff did you play in those bands? Like, what were you, I'm assuming you weren't playing your own stuff at 12 13.
Yeah, I think there are some videos of like I had like 2 songs that I'd written that we would play that are very cringy, but we would play a lot of Pink Floyd. I definitely remember us learning Hotel California. My best friend was like insane at guitar, so he could literally learn every guitar solo like perfect.
Could he play Freebird?
And
could he play Freebird though?
I don't think we ever learned Freebird, but we did like everything Freebird adjacent, you know, like lots of classic rock.
That's incredible. I love that. Like, I love the idea of me sitting eating my pizza and just somebody like playing a 5-minute solo, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, man, it's Friday night. Like,
I know, I hate live music. Like, that's the honest
you
truth.
Do?
Live music that I'm not expecting.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Like,
I get that.
Being in a restaurant or a bar, and you're like, oh my God, is that a band setting up? Like, are you kidding me? I hate that.
If you go into a bar, if you go into a bar with like a couple of your friends and you haven't met up in a while and you just want to have a couple of drinks and stuff, somebody starts blaring it out over the top. Like, I'm a fan of music, but I'm just not a fan of my shit getting interrupted.
No, like already bars and restaurants just love blasting shit. So you just know it's a conversation ender. And also you hate when people talk over your music as a musician. So you're like, why did we come here to talk? It's like, I was in Nashville once and we were at a bar. And of course that's asking for it because every single bar has live music, but this was amazing. There was like, cause it, to keep the restaurant open to people at the bar, it was like a hot dog place or something, mm-hmm. but they wanted underage kids to be able to come to the hot dog place, but not the bar. So they just had like a chain link fence separating it. And we were getting hot dogs. Like, we literally just found a random place and like, we weren't trying to go to a bar. And then a chain. So it's like brightly lit hot dog restaurant and then dark bar only separated by a chain link fence. And there's a live band and the band starts playing Free Fallin'. And then the lead singer is like, I'm motherfucking free fallin'. And then every song after that, including I'm motherfucking wanted, dead or alive.
Isn't that like out of The Wedding Singer? Like that Adam Sandler movie? It's like, turn around. What is it like? I fucking need you more tonight. I fucking need you more than ever. It's Bonnie Tyler. Totally.
I think I found a real life. Maybe it's based on a true story. Maybe it's a biopic about this guy.
So like when you were a kid, like you obviously like got bit by the music bug. Were your folks into good music? Like when you were young, were you surrounded by it or did you have to like make your own way?
Yeah. My parents were very into music. Yeah, I like kind of everything that I ended up loving. I think the first thing that I really discovered for myself was like Elliott Smith, you know?
Wow, what a absolutely deep one to discover yourself. Like I don't know, like that's one of like, because you're so young and so like, you're like a sponge at that time. So like if you go in too deep, which you probably did, that's going to warp you for life if Elliott Smith was your first one.
And it did.
Yeah. In the best way.
Yeah, in the best way. But do you know the band Autolux?
I don't know.
Autolux, they were on tour with like Radiohead. They're very cool. Mm. But weirdly, they all were kind of like in my weird little child scene of like, they were friends with my best friend's parents and started like playing drums and stuff at the pizza restaurant with us.
Okay. What a scene.
And Carla Azar from that band would end up being the person to show me Elliott Smith. And then I was like,
yeah. So you didn't have growing pains as like as somebody growing up. Like there was a year where I was into really shit dance music, like, you know, really like heavy, hardcore, high pitched stuff. I definitely have had questionable phases in my musical love career. You kind of sound like yours has been fairly tasteful throughout.
No. Although I will say I missed emo, like real hardcore emo and pop punk until I was like 19. Like I missed it when everybody was listening to it. I was like listening to Tame Impala and shit when I was like 15.
Yeah.
And then when I was like 19, I kind of like ironically got into like Blink-182 and stuff and then fell in love with it. Yeah. So I had a very late career, like questionable taste and was listening to shit that everybody was over.
See, I've had like a massive like renaissance with a resurgence, sorry, with Jimmy Eat World. Like Jimmy Eat World were on this podcast a couple of weeks ago. Dude. Jim Adkins on, and I was just like,
dude, Table for Glasses.
Yeah, Table for Glasses was the demo that he played.
No way, that's tight.
Yeah, by the way, anybody listen to this, I haven't paid Phoebe to say that. Like, but yeah, like Jimmy Eat World for me, like that was like I got into them when I was like 12, I think.
Yeah.
The Bleed America album and. I was painting my fingernails black for a long time after that. Not that they were like the sort of normal guy emo, but yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
normie.
Yeah, normcore. What is normcore?
Yeah.
I don't know what normcore is.
Is normcore?
Yeah, what is normcore?
Do you ever see like really hot Instagram girls in like ironic like orthopedic shoes?
Oh shit! So like they're like wearing like NHS Smith's glasses,
like a hat, like a stupid hat, and like, you know, like a baby doll shirt and whatever. Like It's just like clothes that normal people would wear, but you're wearing them ironically.
Right. Okay. I get that. So like
Alex G is kind of normcore, but I feel like it's genuine. You know what I mean? I don't think he gets up in the morning and is like, I'm going to be normcore. I think he just dresses super normal and accidentally fell into like a scene.
Does that make Mac DeMarco accidentally normcore?
I think he is the poster child of normcore.
Right. Yeah. Because he's like, even with
like, I don't know if it's accidental for him. I think he knows that it looks funny when he dresses like, you know, a construction worker.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He really does. Like, I remember the first time I played his record on the radio. This is going way, way back, years and years. I was like, he's the first. I remember saying, like, he was the first artist that I've ever played who looks like he eats roadkill.
Yes, totally. Absolutely.
I can see that.
I accidentally had a party here once. Like, Lucy Dacus was playing in town, and I had never met Mac before, but Lucy Dacus was playing. I came home by myself, and then Lucy was like, hey, my hotel is small. Could I, like, have some people at your house? And I was like, okay. And then, like, fast forward to, like, 4 a.m. She's like, it's only going to be, like, five people. It's, like, a movie. And then fast forward to 4 a.m., I look outside, and Mac DeMarco and, like, eight people, including Alex G, are just, like, chain-smoking cigarettes in my yard. That guy is so funny. Like, he made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, he's like a comedian. Like, if he wants to get out of the music game, like, he can just go in. There was a video on Pitchfork where he went around interviewing people at a festival, and it's still one of the best festival interviews that I've ever seen.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I think I've seen that in like Sky Ferreira, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm waiting on that Sky Ferreira album to come.
Oh, dude, so tight.
It has to be. So when did you learn guitar? Like, what age were you?
Yeah, probably like 10 or 11.
I'm still
learning guitar. Like, I only really know chords.
You can bust out a solo here and there, right? Like, especially with this, like,
there's literally no way.
But
Connor tried to get me to do it in Better Oblivion, and I was like, just dude, no. Like, I'm gonna have like a, who was it? Nick Jonas. I'm gonna have like a Nick Jonas moment if I do this. Do you remember that where he like soloed?
And
it went viral.
Is it a confidence issue, or is it a skill thing where you just like, you don't want
to? It's like laziness, honestly. It's probably both. It's like, I'm afraid to fail or whatever, but also just like, I don't know. I like, every time I'm like, for example, quarantine, I like have tons of free time. And I'm like, I would rather rewatch Gilmore Girls than learn scales on guitar right now. But I feel like we'll be here long enough. Maybe the day will come. Maybe by the time I go on tour for this fucking record, I'll actually be good at guitar.
Are you taking the time to like do different shit? Like I'm like, I think the first couple of weeks I treated it like Christmas and like drank and ate loads of food and watched loads of TV and put on loads of weight. And then last couple of weeks I'm like, right, okay, I'm going to be productive. I'm going to do some stuff. I'm going to learn some things. And I give up cigarettes like during this whole thing as well, which has been really, really helping. Are you like learning something? Or are you like, you're probably doing loads of interviews and stuff, because like the record's just around the corner, right?
Yeah, loads of interviews, which is good. It gives me an excuse to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Like, it is like 10:30, I think, in your time at the minute.
Yeah, no, I was like ignoring my alarm for 45 minutes. But yeah, it lets me get out of bed. I have a treadmill that I go on every day. That's a new development, because like, why would you live in Los Angeles where it's sunny every day and you live close to parks and get a treadmill? But it's changed my life.
Yeah, but I can't imagine you like... You couldn't, I can't imagine you with the tan now. Like, do you know what I mean? It's so off brand.
No, it's actually a downside of walking outside every summer. I'm like hiding from the sun, because there nothing looks worse with bleach blonde hair than like a full on tan. So I got a treadmill, but the reverse has kind of been happening to me, where initially I was like, all right, how long is this going to last? Like, I was super, super busy, and then I all of a sudden wasn't, and I wrote a song and I was like reading and whatever. And then I think like last week I was like, you know what I should do? I should start drinking, because I don't really drink. I was like, I'm going to start drinking and I'm going to just watch television. So hopefully I'm coming out of it now. Like,
I mean, you've only done a week of it. Like, I think that's fine. I'd assume that, like, because you've got into this, like, you probably haven't gone to college. So this, like, that's probably your college, right? Just drinking for a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I never went to college. It was never super normalized. Well, I went to this crazy high school that was like people doing heroin in the bathrooms and stuff, and like all my best friends were on drugs, and I think being straight edge was kind of like my rebellion to that.
So you're like Black Flag. You're like the Henry Rollins of the school.
Exactly. I was the Henry Rollins of the school. And it was so kitschy. Like, everybody would come up to me and be like, when you smoke weed, do it with me. Phoebe's going to do it with me for the first time or whatever. And then I got out of high school and I tried stuff and I was like, this is boring. I'm not like straight edge anymore, but I'm like, it's always just kind of bored me. And then something about quarantine was like, you know what I should do? Pick up a really unhealthy, distracting habit. And I don't think it's really working. Luckily. This still kind of sucks.
What are you drinking? Like beer, liquor?
No, like white wine, because I'm white trash at my roots. White wine with like ice in it.
And a straw?
I'm hammered after 2.5 glasses of white wine with ice.
Hey, you gotta,
it's very un-British of me, I'll say that.
Yeah, you gotta try it out. Like when you're over here, like anytime I've seen you, actually you played my club night, the Slacker club night, which I gotta thank you for that, because like you drove from like Glasgow or something while sick. I'm pretty sure like I met you backstage. I think you had the cold or something.
I could like so embarrass myself on this podcast right now, and because I said I would, I think I will. I may or may not have shit my pants on stage at your club night.
Just what?
like there's this picture of me from that night, which is like very hairy, and I have this like my guitar player, and I have this like ongoing riff about it, because I was literally like shaking and sweating. I must have had like food poisoning or something. I slept on the label couch for like 8 hours afterwards. But he like sent me this picture from that night that some photographer took that's like beautiful. Like I'm literally like glowing.
Yeah.
And like he looks great. He looks like epic. And then I just have this like very like glow about me, and he was like, I can't believe you look like that, like as you were like probably shitting your pants.
That's, I mean, like if that isn't the dichotomy of your music, like then I don't know. I don't know what is. That's like fucking hell, like that's up there with like the best story that's ever happened at my club night. Like it's a good thing I closed it like a couple of months ago, because like that would never be beat.
Yeah, no, you can't live that down, dude.
Yeah,
I thank God it's never been repeated for me. I think the closest thing, I had food poisoning, and we had like, and I was on tour in like Florida or something, and we kept a trash can like hidden on the side of the stage, and I was gonna like book it to that if I had to like vomit.
I've done the same,
but I never did.
You're
the first and hopefully the last.
I'm gonna set my club night up and get you to come play for like an underplay for like the next record, just to see. I'll give you like a beer, there'll be like loads of laxatives going, hey,
see if it's a curse. Yeah.
Wow, holy shit, you heard it here first.
This just did.
Is that the worst thing that's happened to you on stage?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's nothing worse.
Because everything else, like, people talking or, like, someone throwing something. Like, I've never been, like, victimized by a crowd before. Like, the worst thing that's ever happened is, like, someone, like, people ignoring me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just kind of loud, but I've never really been booed. This has happened to me before where I'm so lost in thought that I'll, like, repeat entire halves of songs and then halfway through kind of realize that I'm playing the same shit over and over. Like I get on this weird like dementia loop of a song and I'm trapped, and I look around and the whole band is like staring at me with wide eyes like, when is she gonna figure it out? But yeah, that's all again pretty like normal stuff. I think that whole situation definitely beats it.
So like that time that you released the record, you were like one of the hardest working people in the world. Like you were literally going all around the world and playing everywhere and playing every club night and shitting yourself all around the world. But the graft was like seriously real, and it was very sort of similar to the 1975, I thought, because I remember like playing them just when I was starting out my career in radio, that they were traveling the world, and almost when they came home off that tour, they'd become a massive, like when they went away, they were like a couple of people knew them, like it was like fairly indie. Then they come home afterwards and like for some reason it's massively kicked off. Like what was that moment for you that like it started to snowball?
I still like it's, I feel very lucky because every time I get on stage and there are tons of people, I'm like, oh my God, like it's still kind of, the snowballing feeling is still happening. Like Mirrors last year, that was crazy. That was the biggest show I ever played. And Mirrors the first year, right after I put out my record, I remember this guy at the label who I love and didn't know that this was like maybe kind of a backhanded compliment, comes up to me and is like, he was like, Phoebe, there was a line around the block, and then people knew the words.
This is like, the guy from the label? So you're like,
yeah. And I was like, wait, you're supposed to like say that you knew that was going to happen this whole time or whatever. But that was really fun. That was like the first time anybody sang my words back to me. And that was sweet.
Yeah, you got like an affinity over here in the UK.
I love that. I love the UK.
There's a lot of like artists' careers have kind of started here and moved backwards. Like what way has it worked for you? Because I know like with the Killers and the Strokes off the top of my head, they kind of made a little dent here before they could in the US and then almost worked backwards.
Yeah, I think that was weirdly the plan, and it was a compliment to you guys. It was like, all right, get this, like people in the UK and Europe just like music more basically, and they'll like buy vinyl, they like new stuff, and they'll like pay attention to you if you're at Rough Trade or whatever. And so we were like, all right, let's do like a Euro press trip. So it was actually kind of like a plan. It was like, all right, like I had gone on tour with Connor Oberst in the beginning of 2017 in January, and I called my manager and was like, oh my God, like they love songwriters over here.
Yeah, they do, like we do, like,
yeah. And that was so cool. Like I remember, I think my first favorite show that I ever played that was before my record came out was at the Palladium.
Yeah, that was with. Yeah, I was meant to be at that one and I couldn't make it. And I went to the one after and I was like, oh, I hope Phoebe's like, because you did quite a lot of shows with him. Like, you did more than one tour, right?
Yeah, I think only one in Europe, and then we would tour a couple times in the US.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like I missed out on that one. But yeah, like there was something to me when I heard the album in full. Because I was a massive Bright Eyes fan, massive Conor Oberst fan. I actually like his Mystic Valley Band stuff, and I like his solo stuff better than Bright Eyes, which is a controversial opinion to a lot of people.
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
I
think changing your band name, you inherently just like lose a lot of fans, you know, especially if you like, he's one, I feel like he rode the emo scene on accident, and is just such a more complex songwriter than that. So then when he left it to do like alt country records and folk records, people were like, what, like, why don't you have fucking eyeliner on anymore, you know?
Yeah, he also like completely like he almost like changed the way he sang as well. He like kind of lost that like rasp that he had at the at the start, which I was never mad fond of at the first place anyway, like, but when I heard your music, it filled that like dark septic hole in my heart that he used to fill, and that this one kind of came along and sat along with it, and I was like, yes, thank God, it's been a long time.
Thanks, dude.
So then you guys like obviously like, you know, we ended up working together with, let me see if I can remember off the top of my head, Better Oblivion Community Center. I was just like, it's like the last Arctic Monkeys album. It's like, can you remember it off the top of your head?
I know, I was like, he came up with that band name and I was like, are you sure? It's like probably the least memorable band name of all time. Like,
it's funny we were talking about Connor, because like you guys have obviously like got such a great like musical personal relationship. I don't know if personal relationship, but definitely a musical relationship where it works so well. And I saw on your Twitter, it was like Alexa, and you got somebody asked, how tall is Connor Oberst? How tall is he?
It's the echo. It says, I think it says he's 2.5 feet tall.
2 feet, 2 inches tall.
If you ask the Amazon Echo how tall he is, it says 2.5 feet, which is my favorite thing.
It really is amazing. Like, that's like next level trolling. Whoever did that is an absolute
it's G. So good. I love it.
So like the Boy Genius stuff, like you've been doing as well. Like, have you just been jumping from project to project before this record?
Yeah, well, weirdly, I was supposed to make my solo record in June of 2018, like my second record, like this record. And then weirdly, like Connor and I had written a bunch of songs, and it was like the only time we were both off tour, and we were like, all right, like, fuck that. I'll just do Better Oblivion, like, while we both can, and figure out when to do my next record. And then Boy Genius, we were like, we should release a single for tour. And all get together and record, and then it accidentally was a band, and they were both recorded in June. So they totally happened accidentally, and then tour kind of makes it seem like, you know, like more planned out. But yeah, they were totally like, well, I guess we have to tour, you know.
did you want to tour? Like, was it just like a studio project? Totally. Yeah.
Both were like summer camp. Like, so fun. I have been like going back and hurting my own feelings with like tour photos. I miss it.
Does it make you, did it change you like when you came to approach like the second record? Like what were the, like the good parts of both projects that you've taken into your own shit?
With Boy Genius, it's just like literally my exact peers. Like, we're all the exact same age and we basically have the exact same job. So it was so crazy, like talking to someone with like mirrored experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just let ourselves, like, I think we could say shit to each other that we wish people had said to us, like, you can shred on this part, it's not corny, and like very supportive and awesome. And then the Connor thing was just like, he had never written songs top to bottom with another person.
Ever, like, really?
An entire record, ever.
Wow. Okay. Like that's shocking. I never knew that.
Yeah, because he writes all his own stuff, and even Mystic Valley and stuff was like a lot of other people's songs. And he's had, you know, help or whatever, but we wrote the entire thing like next to each other on tour. instead of like sending demos back and forth. So it was much more of like a band, whereas Boy Genius was like 5 days of like, oh my God, I have this little idea, like more manic.
Yeah.
And then
that's fun.
And
though.
Then Better Oblivion was written over like a year and a half of like going on and off tour. Like, you know, we live in different places. So like, you know, I'm in LA for 10 days. Like, let's write another one of those songs. And then we ended up with 10 and we're like, let's make a record.
It's weird, like the little bit of you that's the itch to go, let's spend 5 days recording songs for the fun of it, like a year later, 18 months later, means that you have to like go away from home for like 3 months.
I know.
Isn't that weird?
I know, it's so weird.
There's something to be said about like people encouraging you to like try different things, or just encouraging you to go like, you know, shred a little bit here and there. Like a lot of the time, some of the best music is made when people are trying to make other people laugh. So like almost like the jokey bits and songs that you think this will never ever make it into this piece of music turns out becoming actually something iconic. Like have you ever like done joke bits in your songs before where you're like, actually this is brilliant?
Every day. I mean, it's all over this new record. I like, now I know like a bunch of Connor's inside jokes and I hear it in like old Bright Eyes. Like it's just to make somebody laugh. Boy Genius, that was the whole idea. We were like, what if you did this? And then the other person would say like, that's actually a cool idea. Like, let's do it.
Is there like any, is there any Easter eggs across your records that like people might hear?
Well, I like Scream on it. That was like initially.
Like guttural, like.
Like really, really loud screaming, and then it ends with like fake crowd noises. It's like, and I was trying to make people laugh, and it ended up on the record.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's other stuff like inside jokes.
When you're on tour, and you know, like as you can kind of consistently have been for quite a long time. I've always got the vibe that you're probably, and you can tell me if I'm wrong and tell me to get bent, like, but like you give me the vibe that like you're like into like true crime podcasts and stuff like that.
Deeply, yes.
Like what are the ones you listen to?
I listen to My Favorite Murder a lot. It's my favorite one by far. I know 1975 too. I feel like revitalized when they have like a new episode. It's just like, it's just the right amount of funny. Like some of them are just really insensitive, honestly. Like it's funny because I am really into true crime in like a sick, dark way, but it does seem like very, they do a lot of outreach for like victims' rights and like,
I think they have to.
Yeah, I would totally. Yeah. But like, but so many people don't. So many people are just like, it's like a novel when actually like it happened to a real person. So I think they're the right amount of funny and the totally right amount of respectful and like give back, and they have like real cops talking and just so many, like, I don't know, I feel like the fan base is very respectful too. Like they don't really get people who are making light of it at all.
It's not 100% murder porn. Like there is a sort of heartbeat behind it. Yeah,
exactly.
Are you the sort of person?
And there are other ones that are kind of murder porn that I will like dip my toe in, and then I'm just like, I feel weird. Like that's just my favorite one, but I do watch like Cold Case Files and whatever whenever it's on cable. And it's just so dated.
I've never watched Cold Case Files before before I was in New York about a year ago, and I'd been out for St. Patrick's Day, obviously. And I was just lying in bed the next day, and like the TV was in front of me, and I was like, oh, I'll stick something on. I love watching adverts. Like American adverts are absolutely amazing. Like, cause like one will be, take this pill. This pill will make you amazing. And then the ad straight after, has this pill made you ill? Call us. Yeah.
And, may cause death.
Yeah.
may cause you to lose every single friend you've ever made.
And I watched Cold Case Files and I was absolutely obsessed. I watched about 6 hours of it back to back and then started watching it online as well. Have you watched The Tiger King, the Joe Exotic thing on Netflix?
Yes, I have.
Did you know, and if you don't know, this will break your heart. Did you know that he doesn't sing those songs? Joe, the Tiger King, Joe Exotic, the singer of it is not him. He has nothing to do with
them. I feel a little bit validated by this, because when the songs would come on, I'd be like, that's not his voice.
Mm. No, like, yeah, exactly. But part of me wanted to believe that, like, he was like a rad country singer as well.
Totally. Yeah. No, wow, my image of him is so shattered. Yeah. Now that I know
as if he wasn't like an absolute knob already.
Yeah. So good.
The 1975 kind of like the bromance between you two is really great to see, because I'm a massive fan of them guys and have known them for an awfully long time, and I'm a big fan of yours too. How did the relationship between you and Maddie fire up? He's mad for sliding into the DMs, isn't he?
Yeah, he's mad for sliding into the DMs, and he definitely did with me. And then we just sent like really absurdist memes back and forth for like months.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while there'd be like a demo.
Well, I feel like
this is amazing.
He would write to you, or you would write to him, or how would that work?
He would write to me with demos. I don't think I ever sent him a demo. Or actually, he complimented my funeral song or something, and I sent him a video of Better Oblivion playing it on tour where Connor screams it like a punk song.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was only 1975 demos, and I was just so like, yeah. And also now listening back to the record, their record, I'm like, oh my God, I remember when this song was like a half idea. Like they really are just like, there's no like magic behind them writing like bangers left and right. It's literally just like they're a great band.
They just,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
some weird like guitar line. He was like, I'm going to turn this into something. And then 2 weeks later, it'd be like this full on pop song.
They're just restless and talented at the same time. And that makes a great band. I also really enjoy the fact that they give no shits about cohesion of sound.
I love it. They give no shits. Like, they talk about someone who's like, you know, he doesn't even have any separation between jokes and lyrics anymore. Like, things that I have to dare myself to do, that band is like, no, we're gonna say masturbate right now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we're
but
gonna do it.
I mean, you're not far behind, right?
No, not at all. It just takes a minute. It takes like 3 days of like, I think I can say that. And Maddie's like, actually, he was like, you should write a verse about like eating ass. And I was like, yeah. What? And he was like, totally not kidding.
Yeah. Did you?
I couldn't do it.
No, I don't think I could do it. Like
I tried and failed.
The archetype for me, like, in terms of like writing funny lyrics and thinking, going, why did they ever write that? Was Morrissey, like in the Smiths. This is like I'm talking, it's hard to talk about Morrissey in a modern context because he was so great when so great as a lyricist, totally. But he's such a fucking cretin now that he's like completely wrecked.
My friend Christian has a lyric where he's like, he says Morrissey apologist. I love that.
That, I mean, that's kind of like what Smiths fans really are right now. Like, I mean, that's sad to say, because like they're one of my favorite bands of all time. Best bass player, best guitarist, best lyricist, and probably best drummer of a specific era. And they hammered out four albums in like four or five years.
It was, I know, like, legends.
It was like, why? Yeah, it was like the Beatles gone emo, but from Manchester.
Yeah, totally. That's so true.
So the new album's called, is it like, I might be wrong on this, but the new album's called Punisher.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sick name. Like that, I mean, it just makes it sound like a death metal record, doesn't it?
That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
I'm glad you think that.
Yeah, well, it does, like, and I can see the album cover of just being one of those like metal logos that you can't read.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So I think that's pretty much like, yeah, that's pretty much all we got time for on the podcast. Right now, I like, you absolutely blew my mind with that Slacker story, and I never knew. And like, how long ago was that? Like 3 years ago, 2 years, 3 years? It probably is 3 years ago at this stage. Like,
I think I like blacked it out, and this is the first time I've been able to like really face it, you know, without my like true friends.
Yeah,
it's I'm ready to like look it in the face and be like, dark times.
It's
come
good.
A long way.
You gotta walk through the fear sometimes. You gotta look at it in the eye and just battle it out.
Just I'm looking that time in my life straight in the eye.
I like to think that I played a part in one of the worst periods that you ever had on stage. I don't get to say that very often. I remember one final thing I remember about that show is like you said thanks for getting you on the show, and then played Motion Sickness and like the lyrics of it, and I was just like, because it starts with I hate you, and I was like going fucking hell if all the songs like I wasn't even sure. I was like going, I don't know whether like she actually meant that or not. I was like, well, that doesn't matter. It sounded great. Who cares?
Well, a testament to you is that I was like, you guys, I'm really sick. And everybody in the UK was like, this is really cool. Like, you're going to want to do this. And I'm so glad that I did. But I was like, I'm sick. And they were like, if there was a thing to not be sick for, it's the show. Yeah. So I'm glad.
Yeah, well, like to be fair, like if I had known you were that sick, I would have been like, Phoebe, go home, like, you know, go and lie down.
I'm like dripping like beads of sweat. I'm
yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. Mush, more. thank you for giving me an hour of your time, and I like genuinely cannot wait to hear the new record, because like I've like reached that point with Stranger to the Alps now of like if I play it again. Like I will become it, like I will be sapped on to it digitally. So and the thing is, like, there's been enough distance between that record and this one for me to go, right, I think I need something new now.
Well, thanks, dude.
Wicked.
I'm excited.
All right. Well, I'll approach with caution next time I see you in the UK. But
I'll be honest next time.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for your time. Good luck with everything, and Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
Thanks, dude. All right, later.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.